Okay, be honest. Have you ever sat down with your morning coffee, fully convinced you're about to conquer the world, and then somehow found yourself scrolling, snacking, alphabetizing your inbox, and wondering why your brain feels like it's running dial-up internet? If that feels a little too relatable, listen up. Everyday Dose is coffee with benefits. It's the same delicious coffee you already love, plus lion's mane, collagen protein, chaga, and nootropics to help support focus, mood, and mental clarity. Imagine your morning cup not just waking you up, but helping your brain fire on all cylinders without the jitters, without the crash, and without the sudden urge to reorganize your sock drawer. And because the collagen is built right in, you're supporting smoother joints, stronger hair and nails, and healthier looking skin, all at the same time. Everyday Dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high quality coffee with powerful ingredients like lion's mane, chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, free peppermint mocha creamer plus for the holidays, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/mindful or use code MINDFUL at checkout. This holiday season, what does comfort look like to you? To me, it's slowing down and embracing the shorter days by allowing myself more rest. A curated space allowing for the best sleep I can get is the cornerstone of this process. Avocado Green Mattress makes this possible with everything from breathable bedding to handcrafted mattresses. Create your natural holiday oasis with avocado products. You can transform your home into a peaceful, grounding retreat and provide the foundation for deeper rest, calmer mornings, and a healthier daily routine. Plus, avocado mattresses and bedding are made with certified organic and sustainably sourced materials. Prioritize rest and recharge with Avocado's organic comfort. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today to create your natural oasis and save big during their holiday sale. Avocado, dream of better. I don't think the
Wow.
deceased spirits can interact with our physical world here.
Well, they do all the time.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. There's all kinds of miracles where, you know, somebody felt an arm pull them back onto the curb and they missed getting hit and perhaps killed with a car. Yeah, I think that stuff happens, but it's not like they're reading our minds and they know our thoughts. They're watching us and they're there and they love when we ask for their assistance, whether that be a deceased loved one or an angel or a saint or a god or whoever. Doesn't matter.
Julie Ryan, thanks for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
Oh, my honor. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to meet you with the video. We had one call before, and I want to also thank you for that and providing a little service for me. And you are a psychic medium, a medical intuitive, I guess. And you were nice enough to share your service and had a call with you where you did some interesting stuff, and it's given me a lot to think about. And I would like to, at some point, get into what my experience was for that. But first, I just want to say thank you for offering that for me. Appreciate it.
You are most welcome. It's my honor.
Let's start off like, what is this stuff? Julie, what do you do?
Well, I tell people less. I'm a businesswoman and an inventor of surgical devices sold throughout the world who learned how to do woo-woo, and I'm a buffet of psychicness. So, what does that mean? I learned how to communicate with spirit, do past lives. I'm like a human MRI with permission from somebody with whom I'm working, whether they call into my live show. We'll do one tonight. It's every Thursday at 8 Eastern. Ask Julie Ryan. It's a blast because people call in from all over the year, all over the year, all over the world, and they ask me questions. They want to talk to their dead grandma. They want me to scan their cat. They've got an ache or a pain they want me to check out. And so I'm like a human MRI, and I can see inside people's bodies with their permission. And then I facilitate energetic healing because it's spirit working through me and with me, to help people heal themselves, because nobody ever heals anybody else. We all heal ourselves. Think about if you've ever had a big cut and you ended up in the emergency room and got stitches. Well, the doctor sutured your wound, but the doctor didn't make your skin grow back. You made your own skin grow back. And that's how healing works. I also can tell how close to death somebody is. I have coined what I call the 12 phases of transition. We can get into that a little later if you'd like. And talk with angels, spirits, I mean, deceased loved ones, whoever. What I found, Les, is that once we connect with spirit, we can do it all. So that's why I say I'm a buffet of psychicness.
Well, how did you know that you were able to do this? If you said you were making surgical devices?
Yeah, I've founded 9 companies in 5 industries over 30 years. So I'm one of those crazy wildcat or serial entrepreneurs and an inventor. I have a friend who gave me a book called Anatomy of the Spirit more than 30 years ago by Carolyn Mace. And she called herself a medical intuitive. And I thought, what the heck is that? I'd never heard that term before. And so back then we didn't have the internet yet. And I went to a Barnes & Noble bookstore and I found a book called Hands of Light by Barbara Brennan, who the late Barbara Brennan was a former NASA physicist who parlayed very complex quantum physics principles into understandable languaging for the non-scientific mind. That would be me. And she was using energy to help heal people, help diagnose and heal people. And I was always interested in helping people heal, but I was coming at it from the supply side, you know, manufacturing and inventing surgical devices to help the medical professionals with their patients and help them heal. So it intrigued me. And I finished reading Barbara Brennan's book. And then I called her school to see if there was anybody in my area teaching this stuff. Because I didn't have dead people chasing me around as a kid. Or if I did, I wouldn't have known what to do with that. And Barbara Brennan did have a graduate who was in my area, and I studied with her for 6 years. And now, fast forward 30 plus years, Barbara Brennan's work was done more than 40 years ago. Fast forward, I teach people all over the world how to do what I do. And everybody can do it from all walks of life. We all are intuitive. We're all healers naturally. We all come in with the ability. It's just a matter of developing and enhancing it.
And that just comes with practice?
Practice and some techniques. When in my classes, it's 10% technique, 90% transfer of energy at a super high vibration from me to my students. Hundreds of people have taken my classes. I believe we're at 14 or 15 countries now. The only prerequisite is you got to speak English, because parlez-vous français un petit peu, just a little bit. So I speak mostly English. I'm not versed in other languages, and like a typical American. And so, yeah, people are doing this stuff within the first hour. You know, what took me 6 years to really study and develop more than 30 years ago, I teach in a weekend now. And I also have self-paced online classes that are little chunks of the big buffet of psychicness. And people say to me, Les, well, if it took you 6 years to learn it, well, how can you teach it in a weekend? It's like anything else. We used to deliver messages via carrier pigeon, and then we used the Pony Express and the Wells Fargo wagon and, you know, in the post office, and now we communicate instantly with our technology and everything advances. So I've refined and added my own stuff to the buffet of psychicness, and it's a blast. It's so much fun to do this stuff.
Yeah, that's great that you enjoy it so much. Can you give an example, Julie, of, you said it's like 10% technique. What's an example of the technique side?
Raise my vibrational level to the level of spirit. In my mind's eye, I watch a laser beam come from my body. It'll hook into you wherever you are. I could find you if you were on a planet far, far away, in a galaxy, another galaxy, doesn't matter. And then I envision shooting energy from your feet up through the top of your head. And it's as if I'm looking at an X-ray or a CT scan or an MRI. And then something's identified, and then there's a healing, and it goes on.
So it's a visualization of some sort.
for me, when I teach less, I'm really cognizant of people learn in different ways. You know, some people are visual learners, some people are auditory learners, some people are kinesthetic learners. And so I want to find out what's the best way for you to learn. How do you process information the most easily? I'm a visual learner. If I met you at a party and I heard your name, I'm not going to remember it unless I see it. If you have a name tag on, that will help me. If I see your name on a list and then I hear it. A little trick that I've come up with over the years is I'll meet you and I'll hear your name and then I'll envision seeing it printed out in my brain just to help me remember, because I'm a visual learner. Somebody who's an auditory learner can see your name badge, but unless they hear your name, they're not going to remember your name, kind of a thing. And we all have different ways that we learn. We learn through all of those methodologies, but it's been my experience over decades now that spirit's going to communicate to us in a way that's going to be really easy for us to receive it.
So there could be two different people that are both, I guess, medical intuitives, let's say, working on the same person that's somewhere else in the world, and they could get to a similar or same conclusion, but it would be experienced different for them individually?
Well, yeah, because everything we experience is subjective to each one of us. You know, and it's all based on our human frame of reference too. Some people like cilantro. Some people think it tastes like soap, like Martha Stewart. I love cilantro, but Martha hates it. She feels like she's eating a bar of Dial soap. So yeah, everything is going to be experienced individually. And that's what I'm about. No rules and regulations here. This is super easy. Spirit's communicating with you. We just got to get you used to tune into that channel, and let's get information coming to you in a way that it's easy for you to process. All spirit communication, I think it's worth mentioning, Les, all spirit communication is numeric. It's numerical, numbers. Comes in numbers. And then our brains decode those numbers into information. Might be visual, might be a kinesthetic feeling like you get goosebumps, might be a sound that you hear or a smell that you smell. Or it's very common when somebody who has a loved one who's passed and they were a smoker when they were alive, you know, they'll walk through a room and they'll smell cigarette smoke and their husband's been dead for 3 years. And they're saying, okay, that just tells me Charlie's here. He's sending me that. I have a fun story about that happening with the smoke. I was in the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas, which is a historic hotel. And I was just having lunch there. And I was reading on the menu that they used to have psychics and mediums that would visit the spa, like before the turn of the 20th century. And I thought, oh, that sounds fun. So after lunch, I asked the concierge if somebody could give me a tour. And they did. And the Driscoll is named for Colonel Driscoll, who made his fortune during the Civil War selling beef cattle to the Confederate Army. So there's this huge portrait of Colonel Driscoll in the lobby. So this little bellman's taking me on a tour. And we get up to this area that is in the middle of a bunch of ballrooms. And I'm smelling cigar smoke. And I thought, there is no way they're going to allow somebody to smoke inside this historic hotel, let alone cigars. And so I turned on my radar, because I turn it on and off at will. I don't walk around scanning people or looking for ghosts or spirits. And here comes Colonel Driscoll, you know, waltzing through this area, just checking out his hotel. And he looked exactly like he looked in the painting downstairs. And then I had the little bellman take me to the different ballrooms. And this was a hotel where LBJ President Johnson would watch the election returns. And so I was in the boardroom where his staff was set up. I thought, you know, maybe I'll see him. I didn't. But we walked in this other room, and there were these huge gilded mirrors, or about eight of them in the room, and they were on all these different walls. And I asked the bellman, I said, what's the story on the mirrors? Because they had a cameo carved into the wood at the top of the mirror. And I said, so what's the story on these mirrors? And he said, well, we think that they came from Emperor Maximilian's palace. And I'm like, and he said in Mexico City. I'm like, okay, I never heard of Emperor Maximilian, and I didn't know he had a palace in Mexico City. And so he said, we think it's his wife, Carlotta. And I'm hearing in my head from spirit, because my radar is turned on, I'm hearing, no, that's his mistress, Jacinda. I said, you ever heard of a Jacinda? And he said, no. So I said, all right. So he's going on talking. And I was curious. So I just called both spirits in. So Carlotta and Jacinda showed up in their ball gowns, Les, like hoop skirts, silk, jewels, tiaras, the whole nine yards. And they looked like they were best friends. And I said, who is that? Who's the cameo? And Jacinda, the girlfriend, said, yeah, it's me. So later on, I looked up Emperor Maximilian, Carlotta, Jacinda, and there's all this historic information available about Jacinda, the mistress. Oh, and back in the day, you know, so much of that royalty had, oh, heck, even today, you know, they had mistresses. So that's just a fun example of how this can really enhance our lives. You know, anything we want to know, all we have to do is ask, and we'll get answers.
I want to understand more. So I hear you refer to the word spirit a lot, and I thought at first you were referring to, I guess, I don't know, maybe like a godlike
entity. Yeah, I am.
But then you just referenced it, their individual spirits. Like, are you referring to something different there?
Spirit to me, big spirit is God, source, universe. And I believe it's spirit working through me and with me to help people heal, whether that be they're talking to their dead grandmother, or they got a medical thing going on, or they're upset because their pet's sick or whatever. We're all a fractal of the divine. We're all made in the image and likeness of God. I believe that. That's what I see. I thought before I got into this woo-woo stuff, and woo, by the way, means source in Taoism. And I think woo-woo is just a fun word. So source, if we're all made in the image and likeness of God, which is source, for many years less, I thought, oh, God looks like Father Time. He looks like some old man, long hair, white beard, white gown, sitting on a throne on a cloud or something. That's not what I believe now. We're made in the image and likeness of God in spirit form. All right? Spirit is energy. Source is energy. God is energy. So when we're communicating with, like, you know, Emperor Maximilian's wife, Queen Carlotta, or the Empress, or whatever they called her, or his mistress, Jacinda, it's spirit, God, talking through those entities of spirit. But it's all the same thing. It's like Jacinda and Carlotta are drops of water in the ocean, but they're all the ocean.
So do you feel like everybody has an energetic component that just lingers indefinitely, I guess? So like if you're talking to somebody's deceased ancestor or communicating, that there's a piece, there's a energetic essence of them that just still exists somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah. And I call that their spirit. It's the energy that is them. And it incarnates many, many different times, many different lifetimes. But every spirit has a frequency that they keep throughout all of their lifetimes. So how I got in touch with Carlotta and with Jacinda at the Driscoll Hotel was, I thought of them. Our heads are like big satellite dishes, and they receive and they transmit frequencies, much like your satellite TV does. And then it depends where we have our attention and intention tuned. And then that's going to determine what the information is that we get back. So, for instance, I'm thinking of Emperor Maximilian, just as an example, because we're talking about it. That tunes my satellite dish head to his frequency. And it opens up something similar to a two-way radio communication. And all we have to do is just ask. And they're going to respond. How you know that that response is from that spirit or from spirit in general, from God, the universe, what source, whatever you want to call it, is it's that first thing that comes in your head fast as you can snap your finger. Or before sometimes, because time doesn't exist in the spirit world. Time's a human creation. And so they've already got whatever our thought or question is, and they're responding to us immediately. Yeah, I tell people
time is relative, I guess.
Time is a human creation, but I tell people, people get confused when sometimes they'll get an answer before their thought's even done being thought. Well, time in our understanding isn't a thing in the spirit world, so they've already got our thought before we're even done thinking it sometimes.
That's interesting. So you feel that anybody, if you place your attention on any spiritual entity, that their brain or some part of your energetic field becomes an antenna, essentially, that can just right. tune in.
Yeah.
And communication will happen instantaneously if you're, I guess, open to it.
And it doesn't matter whether the spirit's attached to a body or not, because when I scanned you, it was my spirit attaching to your spirit. And then I'm using that energy to be able to see inside your body.
So on that,
and I learned how to do that.
In that experience. So one thing that was interesting, you mentioned during that call, you were asking about like my left collarbone, and I didn't think much of it. And that you, I think you phrased it as there was like an energy blockage or something. So later that week, I was having a session with actually someone that was just recently on the podcast, Rachel Davis. She's a myofunctional therapist and a cranial sacral fascia. I was getting cranial sacral therapy, and which are you familiar with that? Or okay, for someone that's not familiar, it doesn't look like much that's going on. It looks like almost like a fake massage. But I'm laying on the table and she has her hands on my left collarbone, like for a while. And afterwards, I was like, what were you doing there? She's like, I don't know. I was just, that's what I was called to. I guess she does a lot of like listening. And I told her, I was like, I actually had a session with a medium earlier this week who told me that I had something going on with my left collarbone.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm very open and I'm trying to be open. And I'm also like very skeptical or
sure.
I'm like a cynic at heart.
Yeah. And I'm skeptical too.
So,
I'm very skeptical.
So like yeah. after our call, I'm like, that's really interesting, but is that full of shit? Like what's going on? Like, I just don't understand. I want to understand. And then that happened late, like literally like 3 or 4 days later. I was like, what is that about? And then I was thinking about the like mechanics, like the physical expression of what that could be. And what does that area represent in the body? And like I've done some studying on the lymphatic system and the lymphatic system is kind of asymmetrical and it really leans heavy on the left side. And the final, like the bottom of the funnel, if you will, is right around that. I think it's like the left thoracic duct, which basically goes right under that collarbone, which I oftentimes find myself when I do lymphatic work personally drawn there. Like that's the first place I go. Cause it's like you work from the bottom of the funnel out, if you will.
Yeah. Right.
And, I don't know, that was interesting. But what is it? So that was my experience. I mean, there were other things you talked to. I don't want to spend the whole session on that. But on your end, like, what do you experience when you're telling me there's something going on with my left collarbone?
Well, I'm always grateful, first of all, that I'm a girl because I can multitask. It's a female superpower we all possess, we females. So I'm watching something get identified and a healing happen in my mind's eye. And then I'm feeling it and I'm, you know, other sensations come in sometimes. And then I'm getting what I call divine downloads into my head of things to do, things to tell you, stories to share, things like that. And I'm chit-chatting with you. So I'm multitasking. And it's really fun because my vibrational level is really jacked up. Because I'm working in a super high vibration of spirit. And that's what happens when people have, oh, experiences where they get goosebumps. You know, they hear something or they see something or something happens that's out of the ordinary. Their vibration level's very high. Going to church, that's what that's all about. You know, churches, especially the early churches, were designed to help us raise our vibrational levels. All the great Gothic cathedrals around the world, just from a pitched roof, you know, a tall ceiling perspective. And then they came up with lots of other things to help raise our vibrational levels to appeal to everybody. They have music, so it appeals to those that are auditory learners. We have incense and candles burning and things like that, that appeals to the olfactory. We have visuals in the architecture of the church and also in the beautifully designed stained glass windows and whatever the statues and all of that are in there. And it was all designed to create an atmosphere where we could raise our vibrational level and access guidance from God. And so when you look at it that way, you know, every culture has their own nuances. They have gongs, they have incense, they have, in the Eastern culture, they have altars where they'll have sometimes pictures of ancestors, or they'll have the Jade Emperor statue or Buddha or whomever. In the indigenous culture, same thing. Look at the Aztecs, look at those pyramids. You know, the pyramids are all over the world. They're not just in Egypt. And so all of those things were designed to help us raise our vibrational level. And so that's what I do. I turn my vibrational level on. I call it my radar. I turn my radar off and on at a moment's notice. And it's a new meaning for the acronym AI. It's attention, intention. Where's your attention? That tunes your satellite dish head to that frequency, if you want to talk to a spirit. And the other interesting thing too, Les, is you don't have to have known that person. You know, who do you want to talk to? You want to talk to Moses or Jesus or Napoleon or Elvis? It don't matter. You just think of them, and that tunes your satellite dish head to their frequency, and then you can communicate with them. In several of my classes, I've had a student on stage with me. One comes to mind where this guy was a brilliant mathematician, and he was working on some algorithm. And we brought in Einstein to help him. Another was a research scientist at Harvard and was doing research on breast cancer and vitamin C. We had Linus Pauling spirit there that was talking with us. We had Merlin the magician show up with a student in my last training a couple of months ago in Atlanta. So it's always fascinating. And then we are able to take part in watching and listening to the conversation. And the information that's conveyed is just amazing. So it's like AI is really helpful, you know, helps us find out things quickly. It's like doing an internet search. But it's not necessary. You just ask spirit a question, you're going to get any answer you want for anything that's past, present, or future.
Okay. Let me rephrase. That's very interesting. I feel like I want an answer to a different question, though. Maybe I didn't say right.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
Let me say one thing about future events, though, sure. Too. Well, it's in my head. Okay. And that is, future events are fluid. So when we get an answer on something that we're wanting to happen in the future, that's the answer at this moment in time. But again, it's fluid, and there are a bazillion variables that come into play that can affect an outcome. Your free will, somebody else's free will, global pandemics, you know, weather, whatever. And so when we're talking about future events, I always put it in with the caveat of, that's what I'm getting right now. It may be different in an hour, next week, next month, next year. That's what I'm getting right now, keeping in mind there are a bunch of variables that can affect the outcome.
Okay. So, Julie, when you say that's what I'm getting, like when I think about the session I had with you and you're giving insights, providing insights about, you know, an area of my body, I guess I'm curious of the experience in that moment. On your end, are you like seeing an image of my body with like a red area that like looks inflamed that happens to be that. Like, how do you experience in that moment when you're, I guess, like doing a reading or a scanning?
Well, as I mentioned, it's a good thing I'm a girl because I'm multitasking. Right. I'm watching something get identified. Like, I see body parts inside. I'm like a human MRI.
Like, so in your mind's eye, like if you were to close your eyes and just imagine, if someone were to close their eyes and imagine just a visual image of something, that's how you're taking it in? Or is it like a felt experience? Or?
All of the above. So as I mentioned, I'm watching something get identified in my brain. I'm watching a healing occur. I'm talking to you and I'm getting information downloaded into my head of things to use as analogies. Spirit communicates to me very visually because I'm a visual learner and my analogies are hilarious a lot of the time. Lest I may tell you, oh, your elbow looks like whipped cream or something crazy. Spirit's going to give me a visual that I can describe to you so you can envision it from your human perspective. When you do that, it helps integrate the healing into your body. Here's an example. My grandson, Sam, who just turned 18, when he was little, like maybe three-ish, he was on a swing set and he fell off and he was holding his arm. He was in a lot of pain. So his mom called me, my daughter-in-law called me, and she said, can you scan Sam? I think, you know, he's hurt his arm. He fell off the swing set. I said, yeah. So I got him on my radar in a nanosecond. And I said, yeah, it's broken. It's above his elbow. It's his right arm. It's above his elbow. I said, I'll meet you at Children's Hospital in the emergency room. And I did. And the doctor came in to examine him. And his mom said, well, he's got a broken arm and it's above his elbow and it's in this position. And she pointed to it. And the doctor looked at her like, yeah, right, lady. Well, guess what? When they did the x-ray, that's exactly where the break was. So I see things inside the body that give me information about what the issue is. And then I'll watch a healing happen and the healing can take the place. And again, it's spirit working through me and with me to help that person heal themselves. And so it can take the form, the healing of something getting added, something getting removed. I watch procedures all the time in my mind's eye, Les, that emulate what I saw in surgery for all those years. I was in and out of surgeries for 30 years, developing products, testing prototypes with my team, those kinds of things. Many times I'll see a healing that utilizes methodologies and devices that haven't been invented yet. And regardless of what I'm seeing in my mind's eye, I'm very descriptive with my client. Because I want them to envision it because it's going to help integrate the healing into their body. On my call-in show on Thursday nights, I say to everybody listening, we got a live stream going and we've got people calling in too. And people are asking questions in the chat on the live stream. And then also they're on camera. And I'll say to everybody listening real time and also could be 5 years in the future, I say, okay, envision what I'm describing if we're doing a healing on a caller, because I want them to envision it so it'll integrate into their body, but I want everybody else to envision it because we're all sending energy, healing energy, to the person who's the caller with the issue.
You think that's more effective when there's like a collective, when there's more people?
I think that it is both very, very valuable. I think that it's been my experience in doing this tens of thousands of times over the years that it's like the power of prayer. Groups of eight, Lynn McTaggart has done research. She's the person that comes to mind where they're able to focus on things, whether it be seeds growing faster and more bountiful or a healing. When we focus on the same thing, the attention, intention, we're sending energy to that person. When somebody's in surgery, I can scan them anywhere in the world. And usually I'm working with one of their family members and I'll say, okay, here's what's going on. Their guardian angel is always over the head of anesthesia. There are surgeon spirits that are advising the actual surgeon and surgeons that are in the room, and their deceased loved ones are in there too, and I can describe what they look like. there's always a correlation between that how many people are praying for that person and how many spirits are in the room. So yeah, there's a correlation.
Do you need to know?
Is it better? Not necessarily. It's something that adds to the equation. People are going to be able to heal regardless of that. But to me, it makes sense that get on every prayer chain you can if you're having surgery.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know in my experience, just through my experience with like meditation, when I've been in group meditations, like the energy of the space is definitely different than when you're by yourself. There's definitely synergies. There's something collectively.
Well, it's magnified. Yeah. The energy's magnified.
Do you need to know where someone is? Like, is location relevant? If somebody says, you know, my loved one is having surgery and, you know, can you, I don't know, do your thing?
Yeah.
Put on your radar. Do you need to know like what town they're in or anything?
No, but it's just fun. Like on my show, people want to know, okay, well, Susie's calling in from Singapore and somebody else is calling in from Minneapolis and somebody else is calling in from, you know, Munich and it's 3 a.m. and they stayed up to call in to get a scan. So it's just interesting.
Gotcha.
But I actually watch in my mind's eye, I'll watch a laser beam go across maps, like go across America or go across the Atlantic Ocean. I have a lot of people that call in from Australia, and that's fun because it's already the next day. Because I'll do the show at 8 p.m. Eastern, and, you know, it'll be in the morning already in Australia. And I was like, this is like a sci-fi movie. You know, we're talking to each other in real time, and it's already the next day. But I'll watch my laser beam in my mind's eye go underneath the globe. Go to Australia. So it's just visuals that spirit gives us to give us a human frame of reference for what we're doing.
Is the idea of remote viewing, well, I guess, is that what's going on? Is that the same kind of category of things?
Yeah. Yeah. I can remote view anything, and I teach remote viewing. It's the first thing I teach in my class, actually, is remote viewing, because we're using it all the time. We're using it for doing medical scans. We're using it to, over the years, Les, I've done many times where somebody's buying a new home and they'll say, can you scan the house and see what you find? If you find anything, the inspector's coming and I want a list to give to them. And I'll say, okay, you got a little bit of a leak here in the upper left eave on the back of the house on the left side, you know, it looks like a bedroom or you've got some rotten wood here, or you got something there or whatever. I can see inside walls. I can see where there's mold inside people's walls. Like if I see mold inside somebody's body, then we'll reverse engineer it. The healing will happen, but we'll reverse engineer it and find out where in the heck's the mold exposure coming from.
Interesting.
And so that makes it really fun too. Yeah, I was talking with somebody yesterday who her body was full of mold inside, which causes all these crazy symptoms that don't seem to be connected, but they are. And I said, all right, you know, where's the mold? Do you have a mold issue in your house? And she said, well, I haven't seen any mold and I haven't smelled any. And I said, do you have a basement? And she said, yeah. And I said, is it cement? Is it a cement floor or is it a dirt floor? And she said, no, it's a dirt floor. It's a really old house. I go, well, bingo. Is your HVAC down there? She said, yeah. I said, you can't have dirt without mold. And so her HVAC is down there. So it's spreading all those mold spores, you know, when the heat or the air conditioning's on around her whole house.
And yeah, unfortunately, I think mold is really common. You see, I think a lot of people
are very common.
Affected
yeah,
by it,
and it's a missing diagnosis too. Yeah, a lot of.
Well, I think it's, you know, kind of misunderstood in the, I guess, like the traditional Western medical model. They don't.
Well, they're just not trained to look
right.
for it
they don't
or
have
what
the
to do with it.
For it.
Yeah, I have a guy who was who is a physician in Santa Barbara, ER physician, and he was bedridden. I mean, he had all kinds of neurological problems. The guy was dying. And his dad scheduled an appointment with me. And I scanned him and I said, he is full, full, full of mold. And he'd been to every doctor that he knew. I mean, he was a physician himself. And so I got him in touch with a mold expert, and there was a new test that had been developed, and I got him in touch with them, and he did the test, and they got him well. 6 months later, he called me, and he said, "You saved my life." I said, "No, I didn't." I said, "You healed yourself. I was just the conduit to help you heal yourself." What I do is part of the healing equation, Eastern medicine, Western medicine, complementary, chiropractic, whatever, all part of the puzzle. That's the healing equation. And that's just one area I work in.
Have you done any research on or learning about our governments, like remote viewing?
Yeah, all the intelligence agencies. CIA has a whole department of people that they train to do remote viewing. One of the most famous remote viewers was a guy named Ingo Swann during the Cold War, and he did a lot of research with Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. And there's a great documentary on YouTube called Third Eye Spies. And back then, the ICBMs, the nuclear weapons, the Russians had them on mobile. They were like these big trucks, and they would move them around. And the satellite technology wasn't advanced enough yet to be able to really pinpoint where they were, especially if they were hidden in forests or you know, dense foliage. And these guys were nailing it. They knew exactly what was going on. And how it all came about was the Russians had departments of people that were doing remote viewing on. You know, on the U.S.
Do you think they're still doing that? Do you think?
Absolutely. I know they are. Yeah. 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 The CIA has a whole department of people. Every military intelligence operation globally has remote viewers.
Have you ever been approached by any of those organizations or?
Not interested. Not my wheelhouse.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So there's guys you think that like just sit in an office all day and they have orders to like find where the enemy's stuff is?
Yeah. Yeah. Watch that Third Eye Spies. Well, it's like a documentary that's on YouTube. They not only found the Russian, you know, where those Russian missiles were, but they found some really clandestine military intelligence something, something in a mountaintop. And back then, the different intelligence agencies didn't communicate with one another. Like the Army wasn't communicating with the Navy or the CIA or whatever. They were so mad that somebody was not able to find specifically where they were from a latitude and longitude standpoint, but also they could describe what they saw inside, you know, what the setup was inside. Oh, yeah, this is a real thing.
Is it used at all on a more local, well, I guess even a national level, in like crime solving, I guess, or?
Yes, I have done some of that where there will be a missing person and I'll be able to give them latitude and longitude coordinates of where that person is. There was a woman who called into my show many years ago. We're on episode like 725. Wow. This was maybe in the first 100 episodes. So it was several years ago. And they had a family friend whose daughter was missing. And so I tuned into I got the daughter's name. So I connected to my caller and connected from my caller to this missing woman's spirit. And her spirit showed up right in front of my desk. So I knew she was dead. And I saw a scene of her riding a bike and being forced off the road by a pickup truck into a cornfield. And she was pretty far into the cornfield and then was killed. And so I was able to come up with latitude and longitudinal information that helped the police find her. Also, it's been fun because when somebody has a loved one at the end of their lives and they're wondering if they have a safety deposit box or a will or anything, and grandma's in a coma, I'm talking to grandma's spirit. She hasn't died yet. Her spirit's still attached to her body. And we can talk about that, what happens when somebody dies. And so I'll say, "Do you have a will?" "Yeah, where is it?" "It's in my safety deposit box." "Where's the safety deposit box?" "This is in South Africa." I think it was Cape Town. And she said, "It's on X Street, it's at XYZ Bank, and it's box number whatever." And so we got that information to the family, and the family was able to access that information. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know.
So what does happen? You said that we could talk about what happens when someone dies.
Yeah. What happens when we die, I call it the 12 phases of transition, Les, and it's how our spirit and our body separate when somebody dies, when they experience bodily death. The spirit continues into eternity. And so the spirit exits the body through the top of the head. My experience is that our body's inside our spirit. Spirit's the main power source for the body. And if you look at an old master's painting of a religious figure, Jesus, Buddha, a saint, whoever, oftentimes they're depicted with a halo around their head or around their whole body. That's their spirit. It's their energy field. It's their aura. You hear it, these different names. And so as the body and the spirit are detaching from one another, the spirit hangs on to the top of the head, and it looks like a speech bubble in a cartoon. And this happens to everybody. Everybody goes through what I call the 12 phases of transition, regardless of how they die. If it's instantly, like in the case of a homicide or suicide, or prolonged over days, weeks, months, even years, perhaps somebody has Alzheimer's or cancer or whatever. And so then I call that phase one. And then what happens is the closest maternal spirit to the person who's dying, they're the next thing that happens. They show up and they run the spirit world side of the dying equation, which really surprised me, because I thought God probably had like a death department in heaven. And they'd say, oh, you know, Maggie Mae's dying in Mississippi. Let's dispatch a bunch of angels to help. The angels come in, but it's the maternal spirit closest to the person who's dying who's running the show from the spirit world. So, for example, my mother's deceased. When I'm dying, it will be my mother who will come in first and will run the show. If she was still alive, it would be my maternal grandmother. If she was still alive, it would be her mother, be my maternal grandmother's mother. It's always on the maternal line, which is interesting. And in many cultures, children are not considered, like in the Jewish culture, children aren't considered Jewish unless they're born of a Jewish mother. And I see that in other cultures too. So I think there's more to the story than that. And then the paternal spirit closest to the dying person shows up. And then these angels show up. And these are big old angels, Les. They look, I went through 12 years of Catholic schools. So they look the way I was taught they look. Big wings, white gown, rope belt, bare feet. Somebody that grew up in an indigenous culture in the middle of the Amazon may see angel energy as just a blob of purple fog. You know, we're all going to experience spirit in a way that we can understand who they are based on our own frame of reference. You know, what have we been taught? What have we experienced? That kind of thing. And then they form a circle. Let's say, for example, in this instance, the person who's dying is in a bed. So the parent spirits are at the person's feet, the dying person's feet, and then these big old angels are around them, and they form a circle. And then as the dying person is getting closer to departure, that circle opens up into a horseshoe and eventually a straight line, let's say across the foot of the bed. And I call that angelic crowd control, because there are so many spirits that are there to welcome them. I call them the Welcome to Heaven Committee. They remind me of the Welcome Wagon Ladies when I was a kid. If you moved into a new neighborhood, the Welcome Wagon Ladies would bring you a cake or a basket of goodies or something to welcome you to the neighborhood. And then pet spirits are there, and the deceased loved one's spirits are there, and then spirits from all of that person's lifetimes, and they're in period dress, which is interesting. So I may see people dressed as cavemen and people dressed as the Renaissance era in the 1960s in go-go boots and miniskirts and all of that. And it's thousands and thousands and thousands of spirits are there to welcome the person to heaven. Everybody goes to heaven. All spirits are pure love. Everybody goes to heaven. There was a movie out in the 1980s called All Dogs Go to Heaven. Well, all people go to heaven too, which is an interesting concept for those of us raised in the Judeo-Christian culture, especially. A couple of nuances happen along the line, along that way.
Wait, you're saying those religions have that wrong, basically, or?
I'm saying that all spirits go to heaven.
Hello, it's Les here. I want to offer my sincere gratitude to you for tuning in. I know there are seemingly infinite options to place your attention these days, and I am humbled that you chose to spend this time with me. I also want to let you know that I am opening up a few more online private coaching sessions. I've been coaching clients for over 17 years, and I've always found it very rewarding to guide someone through a transformational phase of their life. If you would like to play a larger role in your sense of well-being, feel better in your body, and support your own healing or growth journey, please check out my services at themindfulmovement.com/less to see if we would be a good fit.
Everybody.
How do you think they created the idea of the opposing side of heaven?
Yeah, of hell.
Yeah, do you think that's just control people or to create a scaffolding so that there's a collective moral code?
Control the people with fear. Control the masses with fear. Look what happened during the pandemic. People did stupid stuff because they were so afraid.
There's some of them are still doing stupid stuff.
I know. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's been an interesting concept for me. And I've just heard it and seen it so many times, tens of thousands of times over the years, that it's just okay, yeah, I buy it. And so a couple of nuances, if I may, that happen. One is that when the animal spirits show up, if somebody lives on a farm or perhaps did at some point in their life, I'll see farm animals. And I'll say, did your granddad live on a farm or does he now? Because there are horses and chicks and ducks and pigs and, stuff like that. They'll say, yeah, he did. And I'll describe what the pets look like. And they'll
be there as a show of a loving welcome too, for the same purpose.
Exactly. And then about phase five, Les, on either side of that spirit bubble, there are two additional angels that show up. And about phase nine, between phase nine and phase 10, their wings start to move. And it's this slow rhythmic movement. Now, the first time I saw any of this was when my own mother was dying in 2002. And I felt like the Lady of Justice scale statue. Because on one side, my heart was breaking because my mother was dying. On the other side, I was watching all this glorious stuff. I'd never been around anybody at the end of their lives before. And I was like, whoa, this is something else. And so these wings start to move of these angels. And it reminded me of a giant owl. Slow, rhythmic, silent movement of the wings. And I didn't know what that meant, but I knew that they would play a role in my mother's spirit detaching from her body. And what I found over a few hours was the movement of the wings was forming a vortex above my mom's head. And it had a very strong upward pull. Reminded me of being in the car wash at the end when they turn the dryer on and it's sucking all the water off your car. That's what it felt like. I could see it, I could hear it, I could feel it. And that, in fact, is what happened. Her spirit went through that vortex, and then those angels escorted her to heaven. So the interesting thing about that is when I was writing Angelic Attendance, my book, I thought, I'm just going to do an internet search on angel or on owl wings vortex. Come to find out, there's this thing called the wingtip vortex. That is an aeronautical engineering phenomenon, and it talks about how the air goes over and under the wings, and it causes lift, causes a vortex to form, which causes lift. Every jet, every plane, every bug, every bird, every kite, anything that flies has a wingtip vortex under it that causes lift. And I thought, whoa, I'm watching this and feeling this happen on the spiritual side with these angels' wings. Is creating an aeronautical engineering phenomenon. Every pilot knows about the wingtip vortex. If you do an internet search on that, you will get tens of thousands of hits on it. Articles, pictures. you know, whatever, diagrams. And I thought, well, that's interesting. The other thing is, all these different steps that I watched my mother go through when I was at her funeral a few days after she passed, and I'd been to many Catholic funerals over my lifetime, and they say a prayer at the end of every Roman Catholic funeral called In Paradisum, which in Latin translates into English as into paradise. And it talks about your loved ones and the angels will greet you and lead you into paradise. And I thought, okay, I just saw that happen with my mother. So again, when I was writing Angelic Attendance, I did an internet search to find out where did that prayer originate. And I learned that it began as a 5th century Gregorian chant. And I thought, well, maybe it took till the 5th century till somebody was well-educated enough that they could read and write. And certainly back then, those people were men living in monasteries and synagogues. And so perhaps everybody's been able to see this since the beginning of time. And it took till the 5th century till somebody could write it down. Then fast forward in the last 150, 200 years, as we've become more well-educated and more proof-based, that's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle. So I found that really fascinating as well.
That's interesting. Do you, Julie, do you have any opinion or insight of like the experience from the other side? Like you will help people communicate with their past deceased loved ones or their spirit of them.
Right.
Do you have an opinion of the perspective of the deceased? Like, is that like, when they get that call, they get excited like, oh, I got work to do. Somebody is trying to reach out or like, do they like that? Does it give them they like a it. Sense of purpose or?
They love it. They love it. They're not going to interfere with our lives. They're going to send us ideas. They don't read our minds, but they're not going to interfere because we all have free will. It's what we want to explore and experience. But when we ask for their assistance, they're like Johnny on the spot. I have a friend named Perdita Finn who every morning before she gets out of bed, she has this little clipboard next to her bed and she assigns things to her loved ones in spirit. Like, Mom, I need you to do this. Dad, I need you to help, you know, so-and-so with this thing. Aunt Charlene, I need your help
but
with that.
But you don't think they interfere? Like, you don't think the deceased spirits can interact with our physical world here?
Well, they do all the time. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. There's all kinds of miracles where, you know, somebody felt an arm pull them back onto the curb and they missed getting hit and perhaps killed with a car. Yeah, I think that stuff happens, but it's not like they're reading our minds and they know our thoughts. They're watching us and they're there and they love when we ask for their assistance. Whether that be a deceased loved one or an angel or a saint or a God or whoever. Doesn't matter.
This is off topic, but I want to ask you, since you did mention the word earlier, you mentioned the pyramids in the context of like different cathedrals and things that were, I guess, created to raise the vibration, our vibration. What do you think the whole story of the pyramids is? Like, I know there are pyramids all over, and maybe they're all for the same purpose, but when I think of pyramid, I think of the big ones in Egypt. Like, what do you think's going on there?
It's really fascinating. I find it fascinating. I have not delved into it as much as I'd like, and I haven't gone to visit them yet, but I plan to. They're energy generators. When we look at how they're positioned from a latitude and a longitude standpoint, there are so many similarities in the pyramids all over the world. There are pyramids in America. Most people aren't aware of it. You know, you think about the Aztec pyramids, the Mayan pyramids. You think about there are pyramids in China. They look like pagodas, but they're in that triangular shape. And when we look at how they're positioned, there's way more to the story than meets the eye. The other thing that I find so interesting is that most of them have water running through the bottom of them. And water is a wonderful energy generator. There are many stories and a lot of research.
It also carries frequency, right? Can't
exactly.
Water hold frequency?
Right. And there are many stories about, especially the Bosnian pyramids I've read about. And people will go into the bowels of the Bosnian pyramids where there's a stream running through them for kabillions of years. I mean, the stream is still running through them. And they'll go down and they'll have diabetes or cancer or something, and they'll come out an hour or 2 hours later and they're completely healed. So there's definitely something going on there. There are schools of thought that they were some kind of a galactic internet kind of thing where different species from other planets perhaps could communicate. Is it feasible? Yeah. Do I know it to be true? No. I haven't looked into it, but it's fascinating.
For sure. You said so. Yeah. You said Bosnian pyramids? I'd never heard that. I'm going to look that up. Yeah, I feel like if there's one time I could go back and see like what the scene was like, it would be probably that. Like, what were you guys doing with this thing?
I have a graduate of my class last who is native Hawaiian, and she lives on the Big Island. And her like fourth great grandmother came in, double great, triple great, whatever grandmother came in. And she had some Hawaiian name that I couldn't pronounce. So I just started calling her Grandma Honolulu just to make it easy for me. And spirits don't care what we call them. They just, you know, they identify with their frequency. It's like, okay, 1737, come in. And we're tuned to the frequency of 1737, whoever that spirit is. Anyways, this great-great-grandmother's spirit came in and she said, there's a development on the Big Island where some investors are trying to build a power plant, and there's a pyramid in the jungle. And if that power plant is built, it will mess up the ecosystem for a bunch of islands in the Pacific. You know, you got to help that not happen. She's like, okay, I don't know about any pyramids in the jungle. And they have this whole elder thing in Hawaii, you know, back from the Hawaiian culture and when the king and the queen were there and King Kamehameha and all those guys. Anyways, long story short, she was able to get to the elders in that area, and there was, in fact, a pyramid in that jungle that nobody knew about. You know, it was like one of those secret hideout things, like in an Indiana Jones movie. And there was, in fact, a developer that was trying to build a power plant there. How did that developer know that the energy in that location was so perfect to be able to harness it and build a power plant? Well, were they using remote viewing? Who knows? But anyways, they got it stopped. So all these different situations arise, and it's really helpful to have access to spirit because they know it everything. May I tell you a little bit about my main spirit guide?
Sure.
One day I was getting a healing on me by my mentor, and when I'm laying on a massage table face up, my deceased loved one's spirits are on either side of the table, and they're participating in the healing. Well, one day this spirit of a dead pope shows up, Les. He's got his pope hat on and a shepherd's rod and the whole nine yards. And I said, well, who are you? And my mentor could see him too. And he said, I'm Clement. And I said, okay, I'm so sorry. I've never heard of a Pope Clement. And he laughed and he said, well, I was never six. I said, great. How may I help you? Kind of like, why are you here? And he said, you're supposed to teach the world what happens when somebody dies. And he said, it's been bastardized over the millennia and people are so afraid. And there's nothing to be afraid of. It's glorious and you know it. Because I had seen it many times by this point. This was several years after my mom had passed. And I'd done that with many other people. So I said, well, thank you so much for the offer. But you see, I'm a businesswoman. I'm not interested because if I do that, people will think I'm nuts. And he laughed and he said, yeah. Everything you've done in your career has prepared you for this. Just get on with it. And again, I said, thank you so much, but I'm not interested. So I go in the car to leave a few minutes later, Les, and I looked up Pope Clement VI. Well, come to find out, this guy was in office during the Black Plague, and he's best known for his prayers for the dying and his prayers for the dead. And I thought, Ryan, you can't make that up. And so he prodded me over the years, took a few more years for me to get the golden ovary courage. Because, you know, guys have breast balls and girls have golden ovaries.
Didn't know that.
So it took me a little bit of time. Two other quick parts to that story, if I may. The second part was a few years later, and I just like was running my companies and doing the mom and the wife and, you know, my regular life. And I'm sitting in church, and I'm between my husband and my son, and from the pulpit, the priest on Sunday says, wouldn't it be nice if somebody could tell us whether or not the angels and our loved ones greet us and really lead us to heaven? And he said, because people are so afraid, they don't know if they're going to fly or fry. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody could tell us that? And I'm getting elbowed from my husband and my son, and I'm thinking, really, God, from the pulpit, you're giving me grief about this? Seriously? So I wrote angelic attendance and I put up my website and I thought, okay, let's just see what happens. A month later, I'm given a talk at a conference, and it's a bunch of C-suite executives, primarily men. And at the end of my talk list, this man comes up and he's got his iPad open. It's open to AskJulieRyan.com. And he says, is this you? I'm thinking, yeah, that's my picture. And I'm thinking, oh, here we go. And he said, I'm really interested in learning more. Can we sit together at lunch? And I have a smile on my face. And I said, yes, that would be wonderful. And I'm thinking, oh, great. I'm just going to get pummeled for an hour at lunch over my woo-woo stuff. So I'm sitting at this table of 8, 7 C-suite executive men and me. All they wanted to talk about was woo-woo, spiritual stuff. They didn't want to talk about their businesses, what my talk was, what the conference was about. They wanted to hear all this other stuff. And I thought, okay, God, I'm in. You know, you got my attention here. And that's really when all of this took off.
Well, interesting. Yeah, people were interested. It's an interesting topic.
Yeah.
I mean, if people are open to it, I think there's a lot of people that aren't interested at all, you know, and maybe that'll change one day. But that's interesting. So that book you were just holding up, that's the book about the
angelic attendance, what really happens as we transition from this life into the next. And we even have illustrations of the positions of the angels and deceased loved ones through all the 12 phases. Anybody that wants a free copy, just go to AskJulieRyan.com and we'll send you a free digital and audiobook version. And you can download it. And we also have it in Spanish, both in audiobook and in digital.
Nice.
So
what a great offer.
Get a free copy. It's a gift for it is a thank you for listening to us today.
And then, Julie, you say you have a weekly show where people can just call in and ask, like, mm-hmm. It's a live thing?
Yeah. Every Thursday night at 8 Eastern, to Ask Julie Ryan. We're on all the podcast networks. We have 5 channels on YouTube, English, Spanish, Portuguese, German, and French. And then we do interviews as well. So we release 3 shows a week, 2 are interviews and 1's the call-in show, which is just a blast.
Well, that's a lot you're putting out there.
I never know who's calling. I never know what their question's going to be. My team puts somebody on. I never know what spirit's going to say. So I feel like I'm at the craps table, you know, each week. It is so much fun.
It seems like you're having fun. And if people want to learn how to harness this skill and refine the technique themselves, you offer resources for that too?
Yeah, we've got classes that are self-paced. I teach 2 live classes, 1 online in the spring and 1 in person in the fall. It's always in Atlanta, adjacent to the Atlanta airport. That's everything's at AskJulieRyan.com. All my social media is at AskJulieRyan, and everything's AskJulieRyan.
Well, Julie Ryan, thank you for taking the time and joining me. It was fun to talk to you today. And and hear about this. And also, thanks again for the session you provided for me. It did give me a lot to think about. I enjoyed that. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. And I would ask you, if you have experience in anything in this realm that you'd like to share, please leave a comment and share with the community. I would like to hear what people have to say about this. Julie, thanks again. Everybody out there, I hope you have a great day.